Greetings, everybody. This is Laurie Handlers, and you are now listening to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. And we broadcast from bbsradio.com. So welcome, and Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. We come in peace. And today's show is very exciting. It's going to be about shamanism and Tantra and all kinds of things related. I want to talk to you for just a little bit about shamanism and how I see that it's a path for people who do energy work, people who work with sexual energy, people who deal with trauma, people who deal with bodies. And I'll just tell you a little bit about my background in it and what I understand, and then my guest is going to talk about it, talk about his experience with it, and we're going to find out a whole lot more than what I know about it. So I'm very excited. Let me just say that I first heard about the term shaman. I mean, I had heard about it when it came to, I guess, people like witch doctors, you know, in Indian tribes or in other countries. And I didn't really, I kind of knew what it was. It seemed to me to be like a person that does magic. And then I met Gabrielle Roth. And many of the listeners know who she is. She works with movement and sound and amazing. She has a major course called the Five Rhythms. She makes great music. Gabrielle Roth is something, you know. And she had a book, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, called Urban Shaman. And I loved it. I took it to heart. I took it to mean a person who walks in both worlds. A person who walks in a modern city and can understand business and the ways of business and how that infrastructure works or that paradigm works, and a person whose other foot could be solidly planted in the healing arts, in art, in music, in spirituality, so the idea of both. And that is someone that I am, and I just so connected with that, was able to see my way with that, just having respect for both. It's almost like what I think to crack the Matrix. If any of you saw the Matrix movie, it's like finding your way through the Matrix and having a firm handle and being able to navigate both worlds. We could even say it's able to navigate the feminine aspect and the masculine aspect inside of us. So that's kind of how I look at it. I have a CD myself called Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn, and in that I just refer to the idea that people can go in the unknown and become their own shamans, their own wizards, if you will, and find a way to release things that are pent up, traumatic things that are pent up in the body, and then go into the unknown, make room for the unknown to happen and be at peace with it rather than fearful of it. So that's pretty much my appetizer for this evening, my introduction into what I think we're going to talk about. Hopefully you will get as much as you can from this evening, because I'm going to introduce my guest now. His name is Kenneth Ray Stubbs, and Ray has been on a shamanic path for almost 2 decades. And is a 13-year sun dancer, which we're going to find out what that is. He has had Tibetan Buddhism influence him, and he studied and taught many somatic modalities, which we're going to find out what that is. He's written and created a dozen books and DVDs on sexuality, including Sacred Orgasms, The Essential Tantra, and Women of Light, The New Sacred Prostitute. He also co-created the 90-minute documentary, The Sacred Prostitute, which one of my previous guests was in that film, Newt Butterfly, and she may have mentioned it on that show a few shows back. Ray's forthcoming documentary is Path of Sexual Shaman, Teachings on Energy, Orgasm, and Wisdom. And Ray is also the vice president of the Association of Sexual Energy Professionals. So he has a lot to say about the subject that we're opening this evening. So without further ado, Ray, are you with us? Are you there?
I am here, Laurie.
great. I'm so glad to have you as my guest.
Thank you.
And, you know, I've heard about you ever since I stepped on the tantric path. I just want to say, I want to give you the credit of being well-known in the field, whether somebody really knows you face-to-face or they've heard of you. I think everybody in Tantra has heard of you. So you have made a huge difference on the tantric path. So thanks for being.
Thank you.
So tell us, I mean, I opened up a lot by talking about shamanism in the beginning of this show. So maybe you could tell us, what exactly is a shaman?
Well, I think to understand that, it's going to take a little bit of an explanation, because we have traditional shamanism from indigenous cultures around the world, and we also have contemporary forms of shamanism developing that look similar in some ways and are different in many ways. And there's a wide variation in what would be shamanism anyway. I mean, in a sense, my main position is a naturopath. In a different culture, in a different time, if he had a drum and had some feathers, we'd call him a shaman, because that's just how he functions. But mm-hmm. He now looks like a medical profession. So people today are doing the same types of things that were being done in other cultures, and they were simply being called shamans, the healers, the ceremonialists, the teachers, the wise teachers, so that terminology has mainly been applied to more indigenous and traditional cultures, but mm-hmm. the same types of roles are being fulfilled today. So society hasn't really changed in some of its basic expressions. The forms have changed, and one of the main differences is, for me, what a shaman is someone who's able to access other dimensions, function through them, to then impact this dimension. And
that's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
And that's very abstract, but how do I sum it up in a few minutes?
Don't rush.
I'm thinking which story to tell. There are many contemporary psychologists and anthropologists who've gone into shamanic cultures and become shamans in many ways. And one of them is named Alberto Villaldo. And I heard him lecture a few years ago, and he told a story which really sort of sums it up for me. And he was taking some of his students and apprentices down into the Andes and went into this village where they were doing healings. And there were multiple shamans and multiple healings going on. And some of them were very drumming and rattling a lot with their rattles and moving around a great deal. And some of them were doing very little movement and basically no sound. And so one of the Western students asked, what's the difference between these two different types of practitioners? Well, of course, they would not say practitioners. And the elders said there, well, the ones that are jumping around and making lots of rattling, lots of drumming, they're still learning how to be shamans. And the ones that are doing very little movement, they're the shamans. Mm-hmm. So what I got from that and some many other experiences is that it is not the drum, it is not the feather, it is not the movements that really make a person a shaman. It's really their ability to use what I call is intent to affect energies, both in this dimension and other dimensions, sometimes using what I would call allies, some people would refer to it, this as helping spirits, to have an impact. And the average Western practitioner does not do that. They may indeed use subtle energies in some ways, but functioning through another dimension is different, and it does not mean one goes into trance. So the various forms that people use can be in alignment with shamanic practice, but until they themselves develop what I refer to as the shamanic infrastructure, it's still the external behaviors. Not until they develop the ability to literally access other dimensions and with their intent impact this dimension.
Okay.
That's a beginning place there. So.
Yeah, that's great, though. I mean, that is. I think people will understand that. I think that my listeners will understand what you're talking about. Because I think that they, I mean, it's what you're saying. I mean, we associate it with an indigenous culture. And that's what I was saying until I saw that book by Gabrielle Roth. I thought, wow, she's calling herself a shaman. And then I got it. You know, yeah, she should be. Why not?
People that know how to take others into ceremonial space are basically doing what a shaman does. When we do psychotherapy, when we go to a healing practitioner, they don't necessarily facilitate going into a ceremonial space. And while I've never taken a class with Gabrielle Roth, what I've heard is that people through the dance and the drumming, they really go into a different space. But it doesn't have to be a deep trance space. I want to really emphasize that. Some people think you have to go into Aldersade or take ayahuasca or peyote, a teacher plant, to go into some really altered spaces. It does not require that. It's quite possible to be very centered, very alert, and still function through other dimensions.
Okay,
and,
great.
Maybe one of the ways to talk about this a little bit is what I call shamanic infrastructure. Through a series of events about 8 years ago, I started to learn about a deck of cards that an artist had suggested that we ought to do together. So I put together a deck of cards, and she was going to illustrate them. And before I wrote about it, I wanted to have a sense for what is this good for? I mean, I could tell that it was having an impact on me, but I wanted to have a better sense. And so what I started to do was going to my way of accessing wisdom or knowledge. And what I began to understand was by doing the ceremonies with these cards, using the imageries in these cards, was a way of developing some energetic structures. And so I started to observe people around me as to who had developed these structures. And one of the first group of people that I noticed or that are beginning to realize had developed these structures, as I perceived them, were Native American medicine people. Here, I live in the Southwest in Tucson, and there were Hopi and Navajo, Comanche, Cherokee, Acoma, and Tohono O'odham, which is a group here in Tucson. And every one of the medicine people, the ceremonialists that were considered like medicine people by other indigenous people, I noticed had certain energetic patterns that would perceive their structures. I also noticed some of the same structures were developed in many of the Tibetan Buddhist lamas. I also noticed, to my surprise, that a number of people who were tantra teachers and tantric practitioners who facilitated other people had developed some of the same structures as well. So I began to sense that this thing called shamanism is not necessarily dependent on growing up in a different culture or a traditional culture. That people, there are many different ways to develop these different structures. And so I began to use the word shamanic because it seemed to be the best term to use. And one other thing here, the reason I started to use the term sexual shaman is because when I did the documentary, The Sacred Prostitute, first in 1995 I edited and published a book called Women of the Light, The New Sacred Prostitute. And I used that terminology, the sacred prostitute, because it was the main term in the literature. And then when I did the documentary, I used the same term, but I felt like I was painting myself into a corner because many people, when they would hear the term, would not really have a sense of what I was trying to communicate about this role, this way of functioning around sexuality.
Right.
The term I finally came up with is sexual shaman, because what a sacred prostitute does, I think, in a traditional sense, is has the ability to dance with energies. And it's not the external form, but it's the internal ability to affect energy flows. And that's what really what facilitating transformation with clients and students and people who come to worship in a fertility culture. So that's just sort of a quick overview of how I see shaman and how I use the word sexual shaman.
Mm-hmm. That's fabulous. Thanks so much for explaining that. It's very clear. And, you know, of course, my next question then was going to be, well, how does this hook up with Tantra? And you did that so masterfully. I thank you so much. We're going to stop now for a moment and take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about this whole energy thing. So if you just tuned in and you're listening to Tantra Cafe at the moment, I'm Laurie Handlers, your host. And my guest this evening is Kenneth Ray Stubbs, PhD. He is a man who studies energy. He's written books and made films on sacred sexuality, sexual shamanism, and we're discussing this, the dance of energy. So please stay tuned for our commercial sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Are you feeling like you just don't get it? All this talk about sex and love, love and sex? Feeling like all people ever think about and talk about is sex? Maybe you are longing for a more spiritual sexual connection. Hey, maybe you are just totally confused about all of it. Lori Handler's new book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy, puts the innocence and love back into sex. And it gives Tantra the respect it truly deserves. In this book, you will discover a wonderful meditation on self-love. You will also find fun new ways to develop an intimacy with yourself, whether or not you have a partner. And now, for only $19.99, you can get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. Right now, go to www.sexandhappiness.com. and order your copy. Give yourself the gift.
That's sexandhappiness.com.
Are you someone who's looking for more pleasure in your life and you've never heard of East Garden? East Garden is a comfortable and elegant environment for women to explore the tools of pleasure and other educational materials. These materials enhance mind, body, and spirit. Eve's Garden encourages women to take responsibility for their own sexuality and clearly understand that bodily pleasure and spiritual joy are one and the same. While in New York City, you can visit the store at 119 West 57th Street, Suite 1201. And now, for a limited time, you can get a 15% discount on everything in stock if you go through evesgarden.com/Tantra Cafe. Go there now. Well, we're back. Thank you so much for staying tuned to Tantra Cafe. You're listening to bbsradio.com. This is Laurie Handlers, and my guest is Kenneth Ray Stubbs. And Ray has just been telling us, if you were here before the break, Ray's just been telling us how, really giving us some definition of shaman and what a shamanic path is, and then he really just connected that to Tantra and to sexual energy, people who work with sacred sexuality. And, you know, I have a quote here by him, Ray. I'm going to read this quote from you, and we'll move into some more of this so people really start to get their arms around it. This is the quote that I have of yours. If we wish to understand Tantra, we must know energy. If we wish to understand shamanism, we must know energy. If we wish to understand orgasm, we must know energy. If we wish to understand God, Source, Goddess, we must know energy. With energy comes wisdom. Without these, there is no transformation. So, what a wonderful quote. Now, let's go into this further, if we can. What else? All of these things you mentioned, Tantra, shamanism, orgasm, what about the energy?
Well, I really sense that is the key, because I mean, we have access these days in this global village to through many different traditions. You know, people 700 years ago, they would have to, you know, travel for days, weeks to find a different teacher. And now we have, you know, just books and DVDs and if you live in San Francisco, say, you know, every weekend there's, you know, 10 to 50 different teachers teaching many different things, so we have access to many different perspectives.
Hmm.
And so I moved to San Francisco in 1973. I called it the University of Life and started teaching, studying many different things. And I was being attracted to many different traditions, Tibetan Buddhism, Western mysticism, sexuality. I took my first class called Tantra around 1974-75, and in the Bay Area, and
mm-hmm.
that's when it was first beginning to be discussed a little bit, and with any great extent that is. And as I look back, what I was really being drawn to is energy.
Yes.
I think that the different forms are ways that different cultures, different individuals throughout our human form of existence have been involved in and have sought as a way of affecting our existence. And what I find in common with when I said it was a Tibetan Buddhist Lama, when I was teaching erotic massage around North America and Europe for 15 years, when I would go to a mountain to do meditation, the most common thing seemed to be energy, energy, energy. And so I realized that it wasn't Tantra per se, it was not shamanism per se, it was not necessarily religious structures per se that I was interested in. It was much more, where's the juice? Where's the juice? So I want to say that I don't consider bliss or ecstasy to be
mm-hmm.
the goal. It's something that happens along the way. The reason I'm saying that is because that's a very common term associated with Tantra. As if life is all about being bliss. It's all about being in ecstasy. Well, that's an oversimplification, and I don't think it's really accurate. I would say life is about transformation, being more than what we can be. And I mentioned earlier what I call the shamanic infrastructure, which literally is an energetic structure that we all have potentially, but to be developed, it needs more energy. And being alive, we have energy. Eating food, and we get energy from sunlight and water. But what I began to understand and how I conceptualize this is that if we want to grow spiritually, or to take the biblical term, humans live not by bread alone. If we want to grow spiritually, the physical forms of energy, such as food, water, light, are necessary for a physical body, but my experience, my conceptualization is that we're made up of a lot more than our physical body. And for the other parts of ourselves to grow, we need energy. But my understanding is that food, light, and water, and air will not really nurture these other bodies. And so the question is, how do we get more energy to grow spiritually? And what I've come to understand from my experience and my point of view, from my cosmology that I'm sort of evolving in my awareness, is that the most powerful way to get more energy literally is orgasm. What I've come to understand is a different definition of orgasm. Part of my background is as a Western sexologist. And it was the late 60s that Matches and Johnson came out with a book called Human Sexual Response, where they had done some really good laboratory research of human beings in the state of orgasm. They did really good and interesting research, and they sort of summed it up in different ways. So basically they came up with a physiological definition of what orgasm is. Prior to that time, there were many different words, orgasm, climax, and many different characterizations. Pretty much after the late 60s, Mattress and Johnson's criteria of what is orgasm became sort of the established truth, at least within academic sexology. But I really found, my experience is, it was much more than contraction of the pelvic floor muscles that was my experience of orgasm. And
this is your own personal experience.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Your body as experiment.
Say that once again?
Your body as the laboratory or the experiment.
Absolutely, and my observation and my philosophical understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, yeah, I mean, I have pelvic floor contractions, but what is all that light? What is all that explosion in me? What is all that, what's all this happening? And I can look at it and say, okay, there's a different endorphins and different hormones are doing this and this, but it still felt like more than that. And so the way I now define orgasm is that an orgasm is any event that results in a manifesting or creating of more energy. And I'm referring to the type of energy that, well, looking at it from a shamanic point of view, if we think of ourselves as existing in three dimensions, the incarnated dimension, a more intrinsic dimension that includes us, but also other beings, and also a third dimension that I refer to as the void or the source dimension. And the way I define orgasm is that when we have an orgasm, we literally bring into this dimension, incarnated dimension, more energy from the other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little abstract, but this is how I understand it. And it's this type of energy that is the energy needed to develop our shamanic infrastructure or our spiritual bodies, so to speak.
Can I just stop you for a second?
Yes.
Because before you were talking about various people having in common shamanic infrastructures. You know, you were saying that there could be people from Peru, and there could be people from Native American tribes, and then there could be tantrics that had these infrastructures. But what could you give us an example of an infrastructure? I mean, I think I know what you mean, but I don't know if everyone listening would know what you mean by an infrastructure. Would it be like a ceremony, a ritual?
No, I'm talking about, we think about the physical body. We have the nervous system. We have circulatory system. We have the digestive system. We have the skeletal system. Those are structures. And what I'm saying is that what exists is, in my experience, other structures, we would consider them subtle energy structures. They're basically, primarily, the focal point is pretty much in the navel area. And that people who, the Dalai Lama, traditional shamans, and some tantra teachers have developed these structures, this structure and parts of it that enable them to have certain abilities, literally certain abilities, to perceive and to function through other dimensions.
I get it.
It literally is the structures, not what you do. And for these structures to grow, to become developed, you need energy.
Yes.
The way to have energy is to bring more energy in from other dimensions. I define that as an orgasm. Now, I want to back up and say, we are made up of more than one body or one system, and that there are other ways to have orgasms.
Right.
What I would call a light body, which is like our nadi system.
Mm-hmm.
Those type of orgasms are incredibly explosive. They can occur without any sort of sexual feeling, without sexual contact, context. They can be in the chest area, they can be in the head area. and they're, but they're very explosive, and in some ways they seem similar to a sexual orgasm, except they're usually, if you have only what I call a light body orgasm, there is no ejaculation. And it doesn't have to, it doesn't necessarily occur in any sort of a sexually arousing context.
Right, it could just occur, and some people can get scared because they're not really sure exactly what's happening to them.
Yes. I remember hearing back in the 60s of Santa Teresa de Avila, which was, I think, approximately 16th century Spanish nun, who was having these ecstatic experiences, and they were talking about her as being, you know, in contact with God.
Right.
And I remember even then, back in the 60s, in the hippie days, they said, oh, that's just an orgasm. little did I know that I would come, you know, 20, 30 years later to a philosophical point of view saying, yep, that's an orgasm.
It's everything.
But it's not necessarily a sexual orgasm. And then there are some other types of orgasms. And some of them do not feel at all like an explosion. But what they are doing is literally bringing into the incarnated dimension an energy that we're able to experience and utilize. My observation is that both the traditional shamans, many of them, I can't say all, but many of them, as well as the Tibetan Buddhist lamas, as well as the contemporary tantric teachers, have, by hook or crook or whatever, have developed some of these shamanic infrastructures. And so when they meditate, they're literally creating energies. When they're having sex and having orgasm, they're creating these energies. When they're communing with nature, they're a way of generating these energies. So it's available to us in many different ways, but the most common way for the average person is with sexual orgasm. And one more comment about this, that by developing this structure that I've summed up and called the shamanic infrastructure, part of that function is enables us to have a direct connection with God, Source, Goddess, which enables us to live an existence without having to go through a priest or a priestess or a pope. It's that we need gurus and teachers to teach, but we do not have to go through some established authoritarian person to have a connection with God. We're able to have our own direct connection. And that's what happens as we developed these, what I call, shamanic infrastructure.
That's a lot to say all at once.
I have a 10-day program that I teach this in, but I'm trying to say in 15 minutes.
You're doing great by me. I'm following you, and I think there are many of my listeners. Many of my listeners are people who have studied some tantra. They know about moving energy. They know about moving energy within. They certainly know about orgasm. They know that it's more than coming. You know, they know they can, you know, they've elevated orgasm to being much more than that when they know about what sacred sexuality is. So, you know, you're giving us some challenging brain candy, you know, like some ways to shift the paradigm a little bit and go, wow, this is even more than I thought. You know, here's a guy who's thinking about this in a way that's, you know, that's not only intense, but it's scholarly, you know, scholarly looking at it in that particular light. So, yeah, I think you're doing great in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. We're going to break again in a moment, so I want to just let you know, that I'm excited. I want to know what you do in your 10-day training class, and I also want to let people know how to get in touch with you, so I'll do that and then we'll break. If you'd like more information from Kenneth Ray Stubbs, you should go to one of two websites, either sexualshamanseminars.com or secretgardenpublishing.com. It can be accessed at both of those websites. And we'll be right back. We're taking a short break. You're listening to Tantra Cafe. If you want financial advice on how to plan for the future, I know exactly who you should call. My friend, Jeff DeLone. Jeff's worked with over 300 individuals, professionals, and corporations in the past 20 years. He helps clients develop strategies for estate planning, investments, and retirement. Jeff DeLone is located in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania. But wherever you are in the United States, you can reach Jeff at 610-356-1254. Or you can email him at jdelone@delonefinancialgroup.com. That's jdelone@delonefinancialgroup.com.
Securities and investment advisory services are offered through FSC Securities Corporation, member FINRA SIPC. Jeff DeLone is a registered representative with FSC Securities Corporation. DeLone Financial Group is not.
I, Lori Handlers, personally invite you to come with me on a tantric tour of the heart of India, November 19th to December 1st, 2008. You'll see the Taj Mahal and visit the fabulous Fatehpur Sikri, home of the great Mughal king Akbar. You'll experience Jaipur, the pink city, and visit the sacred lake of Pushkar. Then, at dawn from a boat on the Ganges in Varanasi, you'll see exquisite Hindu prayer rituals. You'll tour Sarnath, where the Buddha gave his first speech after attaining enlightenment, and then you'll explore the exotic Kamasutra temples of Khajuraho. Finally, you'll shop till you drop in the Paraganj Bazaar in New Delhi. Throughout the tour, you'll learn tantric techniques and principles, and I promise you'll feel a tremendous sense of well-being as we delve into these simple yet potent tantric tools. Please note that no previous experience with Tantra or yoga is necessary. I invite you to join me in this unique experience touring the incredible country of India. And I must warn you, this is not your typical tour, and you are not a typical tourist.
For more information about this exciting tantric tour of the heart of India, contact Lori at butterflyworkshops.com or write to her at info@butterflyworkshops.com.
Okay, we're back, and thank you for staying tuned. This is Tantra Cafe. I'm Lori Handlers, your host, and tonight we're talking about shamanism and Tantra and how they connect. We're actually talking about energy, and we're here with Ray Stubbs, who has a lot to say about it, and he's doing his best to kind of funnel it into chunks so that people who are listening can get their arms around it. What is it, you know, if you could say, you know, you have a 10-day training program, what's it called?
Well, I call it the Path of the Sexual Shaman.
Okay.
But I have a thought, maybe I can try to present it this way.
Okay.
We talked about earlier about the Sundance. One of my Sundance ceremonies, well, basically, it comes from some of the pre-Indian cultures in the Americas, and it's an intense ceremony often around the summer solstice, but it varies in different situations, in different cultures. And often people go without water for 3 or 4 days, and you go to the tree, say a prayer, give tobacco or some sort of a gift to the tree, and then you dance that prayer back and forth the tree for hours. And so people often try to go without water for three or four days. And one of the things in the tradition that I've danced in for the 13 times is we take a shield or sort of a painting on a 12 or 14 inch or square piece of leather that symbolizes our intent or sums up some of our intent for that particular sun dance. And this year I wanted to not only experience the dance as a two-legged walking back and forth the tree, but I also wanted to have a sense of observing and being connected with the energy of the whole dance as a whole. And one of the ways of representing that in my mind was the symbol of the hawk, because a hawk can fly above and be very aware, have very keen vision, and see the whole. That me is on the ground, was I can only see my own steps in front of me. And so I had a shield of this red-tailed hawk, and danced that sun dance. It's a very powerful sun dance for me. And then about 6 months later, I went to a powwow here in Tucson, and there was an organization that took in raptors who had been injured in the wild and couldn't go back out in the wild until they healed, or maybe never go back out to the wild. And they had a red-tailed hawk there. And I noticed this hawk from quite a distance and went over to it, and I really felt a very strong energy. And I sat there for a while, connecting energetically with the hawk. And what I decided to do is, in my evening ceremonies and meditations, I spent about 10 or 15 minutes for several months, even though the hawk was up in Phoenix and I was down in Tucson, 100 miles away, to sort of merge my energies, connect with the hawk, to be one with the hawk, with sort of holding up the possibility of being able to experience existence from a hawk nature, to see through the hawk's eye, even though he'd been blinded in one eye, would never go back into the wild, to see through both the hawk's physical eye as well as its consciousness eye. And I did this for a number of months, and I started to feel very energetically connected to this hawk. Then I happened to go to an event where a friend was an artist doing a one-person show, and I happened to see another friend, and the friend came up to me and said, "Oh, Ray, how's your love life?" Because she knew that I wrote about sexuality and so forth. And I blurted out without thinking, "Oh, I have a new lover. It's a hawk." And what I realized in sort of stating it publicly, while this was not an erotic connection for me with the hawk, when I would meditate, merge, connect with that hawk at 100-mile distance, it began to feel like the humming, the glowing inside that was not really much different after making love with someone and lying beside a lover and just feeling that afterglow. There was a hum, a vibratory quality that was very similar. And so what I had sort of blurted out was that the hawk was a lover. And what I began to realize is that that this thing we call sexuality and we call spirituality, there were no clear boundaries. When I shift from the form to the energy inherent in the action or the experience, the energy is there regardless of what I call the form, regardless of what I call the tradition. So what I also began to realize is that I perceive my senses that a person who is a shaman has develops this energy to connect with the clients or the people that they're healing or the group when they're doing ceremony in a way that this humming, this vibration, this energy becomes intensified. It becomes connected and merging. And so in that 10-day training that I teach, much of it is really about developing one's intent and developing the ability to merge energies with another being, whether it be a lover, whether it be a client that one is healing through physical or psychological, whether it be someone you are just going out to dinner with and you're just having a good time with, and you just want to be, you know, energetically even close to them, even though you're friends and not lovers, so that, or you go to a group event and could go more deeply into it. Or once I went to a conference. It was in San Diego, right beside a bay, and I went out during a break and just sort of decided to merge with the water, because I live in the desert. We don't have deep bodies of water here. And it's just like, whoa, this is almost like, you know, making love, having sex, because I was just so consumed in the water. So I could still breathe as a human being because I was outside of the water, but my energy literally were inside. And and just to quickly sum it up, in some ways, the way we merge energetically with another being, whether it be a crystal or a plant or a human being or the fire or a body of water, is our physical body can literally radiate energy. That's my term, radiate. What I call the light body can extend fibers of energy out across space. Something I call the spirit body, which is sort of like a balloon-shaped form of energy, that we can literally expand the outer edges of that to encompass another person. And then what I call the soul body is it has a what I call a soul core, a current of energy going up through the midline of our being. It is not the kundalini. It starts about 3 feet below our feet, comes up the core of our physical body, and goes out to about 2 feet above the top of our head. And this can resonate, replicate the vibratory pattern of another person or an object or situation, and in a sense become one with it, even though you're 8,000 miles away, for example. So literally when we use all four of these approaches to connect, to merge with another person, we literally become one with them, and we can, in a sense, feel them. And I don't mean control them, and I don't mean manipulate them.
No, I understand. You can feel them. You can empathically feel them.
Yes, and we can do this with other beings who we don't even see. I mean, it's the same type of approach. And so that's what I think a shaman is doing, that he or she has developed the ability to, in some way, to merge energies, in addition to the drumming, in addition to the feathers, in addition to the dancing, that the energies merge together, and that facilitates a transformation. So that's what the training program is about.
Wow, it's amazing stuff. It's reminding me a little, we're going to wind down now, we're kind of at the top of the hour, and I just it's reminding me a little bit of the Aghoris of India. I mean, the way that Tantra was really originally posed and originally set out, and then, of course, it went off into some left turns and everything. But, yes, it's amazing what you discussed. I think it's... I know it's possible. I know I've experienced it, and I wouldn't have classified it and possibly given it so much in-depth thought as you, but I certainly, in my own experience and the experience of other tantrics that I know, have experienced that. So I appreciate you so much for, really giving scholarly, attention to this.
Thank you.
I think it's, yeah.
But going back to
it takes everything out of the realm of sexuality in the way that people think about that. It kind of takes everything into a whole other dimension. Which
and it
is,
can be expressed in lovemaking or many other ways. But the point is, whether we call it the Tantra teachers in India or the shamans in northern in Asia, it's all the same stuff. It's basically energy.
Yeah,
and so I've chosen the word sexual shaman just to sort of give a name to it, but it's really all about energy and being able to consciously direct and connect and dance with it.
Yeah.
The best term, I think is energy dancer.
Energy dancer. Well, Ray, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today on my show, Tantra Cafe. It's very enlightening to have you and to speak to you about all this. And I certainly would welcome you back another time, and we can take it into some other realms if you like. It would be a great experience. Let's hear how listeners give me the feedback, et cetera. Thank you. It's really an honor and a privilege to finally meet you.
Thank you very much, Lori.
You're welcome, Ray. Thank you so much. And so if you want more information, anybody listening to the show this evening, please find Kenneth Ray Stubbs on sexualshamanseminars.com or secretgardenpublishing.com. That's where you can reach him. You can find out more about his 10-day training program on energy, orgasm, and wisdom. And I thank you. This is Laurie Handlers. I'm going to be saying namaste from Tantra Cafe. Please come back next time. I'll speak to you and see you soon. Thank you so much, and good night.